Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path.
And I'm Matthew Sidney, songwriter, storyteller, initiate, and teacher of the Unnamed Path.
And you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of men who love men and that were laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show, either by calling in at area code 347-308-8222, or hanging out in the chat room, which hopefully can get open, or dropping us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at walking_theUP, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. How have you been, Matthew? You know, been a little bit. Let's do a little quick catch up because we have such a huge show today.
Yes, we do. I'm very excited. So I've been well. Just what's new in my life. I am very excited with the students that I'm working with through the Unnamed Path apprenticeship, and it's a huge honor, and it's also very humbling to function as a teacher, and things are going very well. Also, I just started a new and better day job, so I'm very excited about that. This puts me closer to achieving my financial goals, and as I like to say, I've once again clawed myself into the bottom of the middle class. So it's a good feeling to be middle class once again, whatever that means. So how have you been?
I've been okay. I'm still job hunting. My current job is, you know, not really all that great at the moment. So I'm looking for something a little bit more. But other than that, I've been pretty good. Been trying to stay busy and actually just recently got back into working out. So hopefully, you know, that will help my mood as, you know, job hunt and whatnot. So,
wonderful.
But anyway, yes.
So, well,
you know, today's show. Oh, go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to frame what led, you know, me or us to be inspired. Today, we're going to talk about race in paganism. We're going to try to touch on the intersection of race, queerness, in pagan spaces, and, you know, there's a lot more conversation around race these days than there have been, and I think that's good. Some of these conversations are very uncomfortable. Some of them are ugly, but I do feel these are conversations that need to be had. One thing that I find troubling is that whether it be arguments on the left or the right or the middle, it seems to me that a lot of the white people tend to do a lot of the talking. And there's not enough of a platform for non-white people to share their perspectives. And really, I think their perspective is probably the most important. And here I am doing all the talking. So I brought everyone here who is on the show today, comes from a different background. And I'm hoping that this is a space where people can share their perspectives. And maybe we can collaborate on some solutions.
Yes. You know, for today's show, we have some of our brothers on, two of our brothers who have been on the show before, and one who hasn't yet. We're very excited to have all of them on the show. We have our brother Kyron Armand back. We have our brother King Campos, and I think I see Donald's number, and our brother Donald Hua.
Yeah, he said he was dialing in.
Yeah, I think I see it. So let's go ahead and bring everyone on. see. That should be Chiron, Ken, and come on, Donald. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Donald.
Hi, how y'all doing?
We're doing well.
Doing well.
How was your trip to the dentist?
You know, as painful as I expected, but thankfully, you know, the dentist working on me was really cute, so it kind of balanced.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, this is Ken. It's always nice to have a cute dental worker or a cute dentist, I must say.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start. You know, I already kind of introduced everyone, but let's go ahead and start with everyone introducing yourself. You know, two of you have been on the show before, so, you know, but let's go ahead and reintroduce ourselves. And if you care to, could you share what your ethnic background is? And let's go ahead and start with Kai, then do Ken, Donald, and then me and Matthew.
Hello, it's a waste to be back in the show. This is Chiron Armand. I identify as being of mixed African and Western European heritage, primarily. Also identify politically as a black male.
Very good. This is Ken, and I would say that ethnically identify as Mexican-American. All four of my grandparents, two on my mom's side, two on my dad's side, were from Mexico. They were born there, and my mom and dad were born in the Central Valley here in California, where I am right now. And growing up, I really took on that, you know, Chicano and then Mexican or Mexican-American kind of identity. But then recent decades, it's the Hispanic word, and like that's a whole big melting pot of different ethnicities and Hispanic. And I identify as a gay man as well, and I am an initiate brother in the main path.
So my name is Donald, and I'm of Vietnamese descent. I'm I guess first generation. Like my parents are refugees from Vietnam, and I think I also have Chinese descent, but I don't identify too much with Chinese culture. And yeah, I'm an initiate on the unnamed path, and also identify as a queer man.
Okay. And you all know me, I'm Michael Grey Wolf. I am of Mexican descent. As far as I know, both my families came from Mexico from my grandparents. But that lots of Mexican families aren't really good at keeping track of their heritage. So I don't know if I have any bit of native blood in me. I don't say I do because I do not know. But I identify mainly as Mexican American.
This is Matthew, and I'm the token white guy. Just kidding. I am fourth generation American. I'm ethnically mixed. My mother's people come from Eastern Europe, and my father's people come from England. My father and his family always remind us after dinner in the strict British nanny way they prepare tea. And I come from the Northeast, which, is very, very ethnically mixed. And people really identify very strongly with their heritage. You know, there's not, you know, in New York, New Jersey, there's really no concept of being white or white culture. It's you're Irish or Italian or German, and or even a mixture thereof with bits and pieces that pull through. And so I'm going to ask you guys the first question, and let's start with Chiron, what have been some experiences that you've had as a racial minority in the context of modern paganism, such as public rituals, gatherings, stuff like that.
That's a good question, and I think a broad one. I've had a really wide variety of experiences, and I guess I would say that the process for me in this lifetime has been obviously, you know, observing and becoming more aware of people's projections onto me in spaces where, you know, because we're talking about communities that are either highly specific due to the cultural traditions that they themselves are exploring, or highly specific due to the you know, sort of the rarity of the community. You know, like not everyone, you know, has the privilege to have a local Venusian group, you know, gathering under the full moon, an access thing that might also be connected to, you know, class and you know, educational privilege and other kinds of privileges, et cetera. So I would say that my experiences have run the gamut from being often seen as, you know, eloquent and well-spoken, since I'm, you know, I presented at, you know, different conferences and festivals, et cetera. I remember very early on in my experience as a neo-pagan, I was voracious in my reading the books of early neo-pagan founders, and I knew that I was reading more than the average, you know, 17-year-old pagan. And, you know, it frustrated me that, you know, I think I was in a community college at the time, and there was like a, when the extracurricular groups all put out their tables for the new students, like, to figure out, they were, okay, going over the pagan table, and, like, you know, every European descended girl with long black hair that walks by, they're like, you should be a part of this group, you know? And I remember, like, really lingering, and, like, being like, ooh, I have that book, and they're like, yeah, why are you here, you know? And at some point, I went to a meeting, and then, like, you know, I became friends with them, but I could tell that, like, they didn't even have a concept as to why someone like me would want to be a part of the community college, you know, pagan group. And I remember being at a festival once in Pennsylvania, and I was actually interning on this sort of land trust that's committed to nature, and I in my interning, I was working a lot, so I wasn't actually able to participate in the rituals too much, but I was able to participate in one ritual one night. There were probably about 20 middle-aged European-descended people who had been participating in the ritual over many nights. And this one night, I really was excited to really finally let loose and participate, and I felt so uncomfortable because so many people's attention was on me. I was like, oh, it's so beautiful that he's here. It's so nice that, you know, this urban black kid is, you know, experiencing some kind of pagan ecstatic experience here in the woods. And he was leaving early and being really jarred by that. And not just jarred by others' projections, but again, sort of like, how do I want to move through the world? Do I want to move through the world as someone who is derailed by others' opinions and thoughts of me? And obviously I don't, so that's something that I don't commit to.
Michael, let's hear from you. Start with something positive, a good experience that you had as a minority within a pagan space.
Well, I would say for myself, the positive experiences I've had have been people wanting, like, just wanting me to, you know, be in the space. Most of the events I have gone to tend to be, well, predominantly white. So even here, especially here in Texas, being a person of Mexican descent who identifies as pagan isn't, as far as I can tell, is not that common. You have people who practice Santeria or some other versions of it, and people are like, oh, you know, that witch, they're pagan. They don't always identify like that. Some of them, they don't identify as Christian. They just do a little extra stuff on the side that's not so Christian. But being someone, but me myself, being someone who just identifies as pagan and going to events like Pagan Spirit Gathering or our gatherings here in Texas, I usually find myself being like one of a handful of minorities, and then even smaller Mexican-Americans at the event. And I've had people, they want to hear what I have to say on certain things. I'm like, and that's a good thing, but also, you know, it puts me in a hard spot because I'm not usually a big talker. So when people ask me that opinion, I'm like, I don't know, give me a little bit and I will get back to you. But but other than that, yeah, I've had a lot of people they're happy that I'm there, that I'm being part of the group. So yeah, that's my positive experience.
And this is Matthew. I just want to say, as we get the ball rolling in the conversation, you know, even if one person is answering a question, when they're done, if you feel like you want to touch on that question, please do so. Did anyone else want to share some of their positive experiences or a situation where they were surprised to be as welcomed as they were?
Yeah. This is Donald here. I don't know. I'm just thinking about that question, and something seems uncomfortable about it to me. Like, I don't know what it is, but like, as far as my own race being affirmed, I've never really experienced that in like larger pagan spaces. The first time I did feel my race being affirmed was like in pagan spaces of color, like the Pagans of Color Caucus at Pantheacon, or in a lot of ways in the Unnamed Path too, where, you know, you had Eddie Gutierrez, a person of color, you know, kind of really leading charge on in that pagan space. So yeah, but I don't know about that question. That makes me uncomfortable. I think it's because I've never actually, again, the topic of race hasn't really been brought up as a, except from my experience, as a kind of uttering thing, like, you're Asian. It's like, it's nice to have an Asian in our space. And so, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
This is Matthew. I think that does make sense. And I think that, you know, that's an important, I think it's valuable to all of us to hear that experience. And that leads me to my next question. I kind of want to hear from everyone. Do you want to talk about a time where you felt marginalized or felt like you experienced latent racism in pagan spaces?
Hi there. This is Ken C. And I would say kind of hearkening on the first question and racism mixed together, it was a positive racism in a strange sort of way. So in my life, you know, I'm a little older, on the older side of the brothers. And so I did things, you know, in the 70s and 80s and whatnot, and those racial tensions in the gay world in general. Now, the pagan thing, fast forward to the 1990s, I was about 40 years old, I would go to fairy gatherings up in Brighton Bush, Oregon. And so it's mostly these Pacific Northwest guys from Seattle and Portland and whatnot. So very, you know, low on the pigment scale, mostly Caucasians or white people of various ethnicities. And so there I am as one of the very rare person of color there. And so there was this interesting fascination in the radical fairy gathering, which is very spiritual as well, as putting me in the role of sort of the exotic, erotic person. So it was a positive thing, but it was definitely racially oriented. But it was good, and I had a fun time.
Experience that to Donald again about being kind of like, I don't know, fetishized for my race, where, not necessarily in pagan circles, but I guess just in general. So I think that's all I have to say about that at the moment.
And this is Ken Segan. In terms of overtly negative things in the pagan world, I would say I feel pretty lucky that I don't feel like there was, not like in junior high and high school back in the Central Valley, where being Mexican was sort of second-class citizen, or in the late 70s, early 80s in San Francisco, where there's the Castro clone kind of idea, and I didn't look like the Marlboro man, so I didn't fit in. So there was some racial tension there in the gay world. But in the pagan aspect, I would say no, and for 8 years I was involved in ritual magic, and of course everyone else, there was a small group of six of us that for 4 years practiced some white magic in the 1980s, and I felt very well accepted there, and the race issue was never really brought up in any overt negative way. I was a positive, respected member of this group of six people that did this magical work. And certainly in the unnamed path, as Donald was mentioning, the Pagans of Color at PantheaCon in recent years and Eddie Gutierrez really helped kind of normalize or make it seem normative that there'd be people of color involved in the unnamed path. Thanks.
Michael, Chiron, did either of you want to touch on that?
You go first, Chiron, if you have anything to say.
Well, this is Chiron. I think a few things come to mind, and I think one of them has to do with sort of what we even mean when we say race and what we even mean when we say paganism. I sometimes forget, for instance, that the Unnamed Path is a sort of pagan tradition, because I'm used to us engaging in it using terms of about shamanism or witchcraft. So, but obviously it is a pagan tradition, and it is one that is closely allied with other pagan traditions, and Hyperion had a strong background in paganism, so obviously it's pagan. But what is American paganism? American paganism is itself a very interesting thing, because it's a totally new, absolutely not new thing. A created idea that is, a reconstruction of so many old things. It's a new, not new thing. And in that new, not new thing, we are telling new stories or old stories about ourselves and each other, and a lot of things get lost or retold. And same thing with race. Race is, it's important in my own process, and this has been especially important for me over the past couple of years, to personally be committed to the fact that race is not real. Race is actually non-existent. It's a purposeful invention. It is a purposeful abstraction for the purposes of exploitation. So even though we know these racial categories now and we use them for navigating our world, they actually have no basis in reality and were created in order to abstract us all from actual origin spaces, and to divide and conquer, pit us against each other. So that's what I said earlier. I identify politically as Black, but it is a constant process of my own decolonization to identify as African and Western European heritage. And as much as I remember to, I call people European descended Americans rather than white, because white isn't real. Coming from that standpoint, when I begin to look at that, then the conversation, I think, when we're talking about race experiences and paganism, I think, for me at least, become much more about who is seeing who? Who is seeing themselves? Who is seeing others? Who is fathoming others? You know, who even sees others as a possibility in their spaces? And so many things I think that we might experience aren't even so much in person interpersonal, but might be far more microaggression experiences or smaller triggers that might happen in engaging with art, engaging in ritual. I remember many years ago, and again, looking at that new, totally not new aspect of paganism, really sort of stressing out and doing a lot of studying of two-spiritedness in American Indian traditions and tribes, and myself feeling a strong kinship with two-spirit persons and going to two-spirit conferences. I even wrote like my academic, like my master's paper on that. And I remember bringing this up in a conversation in a men's group, a men's pagan group, where there was this real masculinism, I would say, that was coming across. And I remember another person in the group sort of said, but why would you need that? We're creating a new culture. And it was so insane to me that someone could say that, that like, the idea that cultures just sort of pop out of nowhere. It really could only be a truly privileged person who is so centered in culture to not see how they are boosted by it, to imagine that culture just sort of appears, to imagine that we can just, like, how? Why would you hold on to the past? Why would you hold on to something ethnic or ancestral? And that was hard to get across to the founder as to why it hurt so much and was so insane to me. It was hard to get across to the person, and it showed me that I think that a lot of what we're engaging with, if we want to be thorough, powerful communities, are about the stories we tell about ourselves and each other here beyond when we see each other in person and we know to make niceties.
This is Matthew, and Chiron, I just want to thank you for everything that you said about race and it being an artificial construct, and I also want to thank you for making the effort to phrase, for example, people as European descended. I agree with you 120%. I've been making those same arguments, and I actually resent the census forms, or when I start a new job and I'm asked to identify my race, because I feel that those questions in and of themselves actually perpetuate the artificial divisions that keep us divided and make it and perpetuate the exploitation of the common people. So I just wanted to say thank you.
And yes, this is Ken C. I'll chime in on that. Years ago, I worked in a mental health facility, and there was an African-American psychologist, the wise old guy. And there was, you know, a fashionable trend in academia to refer to American Indians as Amerinds, like American Indians kind of mixed the words together, and then the Europeans as Urams, and the African-American descended people as Aframs. It's like, oh, my goodness. Okay, so these cute little words. I haven't heard anyone else use those, and I don't see them much in modern writing. And I think now, as Kai, you're bringing us to these modern perspectives, this is fabulous. I'm really excited to hear what you say. In one tradition I participate in, namely the Theosophical movement, there's this idea that's one of the three main ideas of the movement, which is to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of all mankind. And I think in the 1990s, early 2000s, with the Genome Project, the scientific evidence is that, boy, oh boy, our DNA, regardless of what we consider these races or ethnicities as, you know, humans and the Homo sapiens species, is so close. You know, each group is so close to the other group. It's just remarkable. So thank you again.
Yeah. And this is Donald. I want to chime in too, and I totally agree with Ty and this the idea of race and even ethnicity. I think it's rooted in, well, there definitely a very Eurocentric perspective where I think it was created to, like, kind of separate people and kind of like this hierarchy of power where that's also rooted in colorism and elitism. And I think some things I think about as far as colorism is like the lighter skin you are, the more privileges you end up owning. And sometimes I think about my own privileges as like someone of Asian descent or Vietnamese and lighter skin. Like I do hold privileges, and I do realize how I can be the oppressor too, and making sure, being really mindful of that. And I think you also touch on a larger perspective, like representation. And I think about the second question you asked about negative experiences. I think I've never really had any overt negative experiences, but I think especially as I'm going through my master's in counseling program, which is very much rooted in social justice work, I'm realizing how representation really does matter as far as like political power and being seen. And I think one thing that's stuck out to me in my later academic years is like how, again, that Eurocentrism of like paganism. Like, for example, for the longest time, I didn't see myself in the god and goddess figures. And I didn't think about it at the time, but I realized a lot of them were very much like Nordic or Celtic looking like deities. And then if other deities are like from other cultures or represented, almost seems like they're represented as like a offshoot of that main image of divinity. And I think that's one aspect where I'm starting to really challenge. And then also in pagan spaces themselves, I'm always finding myself as being the only Asian pagan in a lot of different spaces. So realizing how much that plays into how invisible I often feel in those spaces. So,
yeah, this is Michael. Going to say, kind of piggybacking off of something that Donald just said, you know, when most people think of, you know, the god and goddess in modern paganism, they usually have very Eurocentric features. And I was wondering, have any of y'all ever felt like pagan, like the modern pagan movement, especially here in America, do you feel like it's ever feel like it's mainly a white movement or a European centric movement? Because I know for myself, when I first started getting into paganism, all I saw were images of like Celtic deities or Norse deities, or I mean even the Romans, Roman and Greek deities. I don't know about y'all.
Oh, this is Kyle. I would say that I would agree that paganism is primarily a European American scene and invention, because this is the group of people that was first disenfranchised from their own traditions. And even though my own path began with me identifying as neo-pagan and frankly having and really feeling no connection at all to Aphrodite's flow traditions, even though I was surrounded by them living in New York, even though I was dating Cuban guys who bought Florida water, you know, every 6 months, I still was like, I don't know what that is. You know, I don't know what the orishas are, but I love Starhawk, you know, and, you know, really not feeling that connection. And of course, you know, coming across Black people sometimes for whom this weird identity thing wasn't an issue because it was in their family and they knew that they had their own traditions. It wasn't until I engaged hoodoo folk magic that I began to say, oh, okay, this feels related to root, this feels related to home for me, even if it's just because of my lived Protestant Christian background and how it connects to this. But I think I also want to speak to what Donald said. That was an important piece for me. I think that the piece around representation, because paganism, I think, is primarily about identity. Someone can go through life and never attend a ritual, not do a single spell, and totally identify as pagan just based on their sort of beliefs, whereas things connected to paganism might be more more than just about identity. They might be about efficacy. They might be about someone's actual ability to do something, their ability to transform. Right? To me, shamanism, for instance, is not so much about identity as it is about efficacy. And that those early wounds that were like, you know, all the guys are getting, you know, cool, you know, pictures of themselves as Kernanus, and like, there's no black Kernanus, you know, drawings to inspire me and make me feel sexy and pagan. You know, after I got over that, the next piece was, oh shit, what if we're all getting hyped up on these hyper-masculine, you know, ripped ab European Kernanus pictures that make us all feel, you know, sexy white pagan and ready to go fuck in the woods, and there's a, but we're also trying to get real work done, and there's a chubby femme, you know, ancient American Indian helping service trying to help us, you know, get through our shit. We can't see them. We literally can't see them because we're, you know, we're trying to play, you know, forced metrosexual and like not getting over like sort of stuff that the spirit world would be like, this is simple shadow stuff. Like, can you not see us? Like, are you that mired in your egos and sexualities and like lack of identity that you literally can't see the, you know, possibly not according to your society, normal helping spirit right there who's got the answer. When I began to see the level of attachment to these images and how they were really this guiding piece for us as a community, I began to make me think about, well, what are we not seeing and what are we leaving out? Obviously, when it comes to our engagement with each other, but also when it comes to the spirit world itself, if we want to be efficacious. If we want to be honest.
Hello, this is Ken C. Yes, to kind of piggyback on these comments about, you know, the social justice and political power and these other issues. I would say for me also, like the others who was talking, growing up as a child, I was very much divorced from the Mexican Indian ethnic ideas and cultural identities. Wasn't even Catholic as a kid, so that made it even more strange. So then in the late teens and 20s and 30s of my life, I really made a deliberate effort, realizing, you know, from the part of Mexico where my grandparents came, it's more like Jalisco, Guanajuato, those kind of central western states. We were not Aztec. And so, I'm not that, but Aztec was like, thought all Mexicans were Aztecs. Whereas at the time of the conquest, you know, in the 1500, the local population, I saw it at Smithsonian Museum exhibit, about 85 to 90% of the indigenous people died of diseases brought, you know, like the smallpox and syphilis and things like that, or smallpox rather, from Europe. And it's like, wow. And so this whole Day of the Dead thing in Hispanic culture really kind of echoes back to that huge die-off, like the bubonic plague and the Black Death in Europe in the 1300s, this kind of thing about death going on in the culture. So really it was an effort in my adult life to reconstruct a sense of ethnicity connecting. I was fascinated by the Mayans in the 1980s. I spent 2 months in Guatemala up in the mountains at a clinic. And it's interesting, some of the local villagers still worship the old pre-Columbian gods, like Chalk and Tlaloc and those people. It's like, wow, this is amazing. So that was there in the 80s, and I just really loved that and got into reading a lot about the Mayans. And the sad tragedy that, you know, hundreds of their codex books of their hieroglyphs were burnt by the Catholic bishop there, who was upset that they were still worshiping both Jesus and Tlaloc, you know. And then that, you know, fast forward to the 1990s, there in the fairy gatherings, with the very kind of, you know, the radical fairies, Harry Hay kind of guys. I was doing that for about 10 years. Everyone chose a fairy name. So I said, well, you know what? To harken back to the Mexican thing, there was an Aztec deity named Xochipilli, translated to the Prince of Flowers. And I decided that would be my fairy name because it connected to the flowers were entheogenic plants that are on little statues of Xochipilli construct in my adult life. But I really struggled to bring that sense of ethnicity and heritage into my life. And then working with the Unnamed Path, connecting to the ancestors last year in 2017, Matthew and I were student teachers with David Shorey. And David really held me up and encouraged me to further pursue the Huichol Indian connection. My maternal grandmother is from a part of the mountains of Jalisco State where the Huichols lived. So that's a part of a fantasy genealogy, because as Marco Greywolf was saying, we don't have any deliberate, you know, birth certificate records, but it's still a connection that I like to identify with. And one quick little story on that connection. Back in 1997, I was here in San Diego. I've moved around a lot. I was here in San Diego in that year. Went to Old Town. There was an arts and crafts fair for 2 days, and some of the arts and crafts from Guatemala were, I mean, from Mexico, were Huichol Indian art. And I visited that booth twice, and there were some Indian guys with this American importer. And the Indian guys looked at me day one and day two, and then on the second day, they gave me a replica of a Huichol shaman's little basket of feathers and things. It's like, oh my God! So this was remarkable. So these men, these Indians, saw something within me that moved them to make this gift to me. So it was a very powerful thing. I keep it with me today, now 20 years later, and I use it on the rarest of occasions. So I wanted to share that. Thanks.
Wow.
This is Kyra. I just wanted to thank you for sharing that journey of yours, and how it literally also, you know, became a physical, geographical journey for you. I often think that it's really interesting for those of us who chose to incarnate in this culture, the risks that we took to do this, because to incarnate at all is you know, a hella risky business. But it's a hella risky business to incarnate into a culture that is literally all about forgetting. And to incarnate into a culture that's all about forgetting, but to do so with, like, tremendous specificity about the powers that you're bringing into the world. I believe that we treat our ancestral lines for a reason. And I think we sort of really curate our tool set in terms of the ancestral line we choose, in terms of, you know, past life energies of spiritual growth that we might want to bring, you know, into this lifetime to continue to cultivate and stuff. But to do that in a culture where everything is mental forgetting, where we're talking about, I mean, obviously look around us, you know, we're talking about power run amok. We're talking about a huge lack of accountability. We're talking about mental insanity. We're talking about huge risks. And the journey isn't one of being given our tools and our sort of energetic rights from day one and being brought up in that. It's one of searching and having to listen really deeply and having to explore. So thank you for going on that, and thank you for continuing it. Thanks for not stopping.
Mm-hmm. This is Matthew, and something that I've observed is it seems that there's a common experience that we all share and that I think most modern Americans share. And very possibly many modern peoples outside of the Americas as well. And that is, we live in an age and a culture where, by and large, almost I think the majority of us are very much cut off from our ancestors, and whether it be as a result of the transatlantic slave trade or whether it be as a result of assimilation or whether it be the result of near genocide, And it seems to me a pattern that goes way back. You know, when I think of people of European descent and how it was mainly people of European descent who brought Christianity to the Americas, and to me, these are people who had already been colonized. You have people from Western Europe who had, for the most part, been forcibly cut off from their authentic indigenous traditions and had foisted on them an alien belief system. You know, in the Middle Ages, there are manuscripts that the monks wrote where they basically grafted the indigenous records of the lineages, especially of various heroes and kings, and artificially grafted them onto the family tree of Noah and Abraham. So you have an entire people from many different backgrounds who have been deceived into believing that they're a part of this Abrahamic lineage and that they're a part of the Abrahamic ancestor pool. And to me, it's just, as a shamanic worker, it's a fascinating study. You know, what happens to a people spiritually when they are cut off from what their people have been passing on for tens of thousands of years and then forced to adopt something different? And then they cross the ocean and they commit unto others the crime that was committed unto them. What are your guys' thoughts on that? And are there strategies for healing those wounds?
Yeah. Oh, I want to really speak on that, Donald. I think, like what Kai touched on earlier about like American paganism, like I'm just like hearing that in my head, is like realizing like paganism in America is also a paganism of immigrants, and thinking about the immigrant experience. And I know for me, I think I feel like I was cut off from my own Vietnamese culture because there was such a huge push to assimilate into the American culture. And now I'm just really looking into how I've been trying to reconnect with my roots, really like studying the history of Vietnam and like the indigenous Vietnamese spirituality, and also even looking at some of the more painful aspects of colonialism in the Vietnam War. So yeah, I think just realizing when we're talking about pagan experiences, we're also talking about the immigrant experience too. And also kind of reminds me of Neil Gaiman's American Gods, and how the gods are like of other countries immigrated to the Americas and how they got transformed. So yeah, that's my little thing.
This is Ken C here. Yeah, Donald, thanks for mentioning Neil Gaiman. I've seen him a couple times at Pantheon, and I really enjoy that American Gods story. I know Marvel Comics has been really good at promoting different recent ones like Thor, but I don't see a Tlaloc yet. He's sort of the Mayan, you know, Central American god of rain and thunder. Perhaps someday Stan Lee will get on board with that, or his dynasty will give us a superhero of Tlaloc.
This is Michael Gray. Very funny, Ken, that you say that, because I don't know what it was that got into my head recently, but I was looking up like Mexican American people of Mexican Latino superheroes, and I actually found a list, and I'd never heard of any of those people. And I was like, oh, some of these have like very like Aztec names and whatnot. I was like, how come I've never heard of these? But you know, that's a side note.
This is Ken C again. I have another commitment. I'm going to sign off, but I just wanted to thank Matthew and you, Michael Graywood, for bringing up this topic today. Given the political climate in the United States this last year or so, and it's been growing, and this rift, kind of the culture wars, has kind of reignited, I think, racism in America in the large-scale culture that we live in. And, of course, then the pagan world is a subset of that large-scale culture. But these ideas of race and ethnicity, even though I agree completely with Kai that it's a social and political construct, there are many people who are approaching it from a very different perspective, from a Victorian era perspective, you know, from the British dominance, having colonies all over the planet and that sort of thing. And just as a side note, my 1 o'clock commitment is on the Bhagavad Gita. And so I don't think we have anyone here representing the Indian subcontinent, but it's another ethnic and racial subgroup there. Anyway, thanks again. I'm glad to be here today, and I'm going to sign off. Bye.
Thank you for joining us, Ken. This is Matthew, and I know Ken Campos had mentioned Marvel, and of course, we are hot on the heels of Black Panther, and Black Panther in the movie and in the comics, because I do remember being a comic book geek, I remember this from the books, he is a shamanic practitioner, and so my question to you guys, have you guys seen the movie, and what are your thoughts on the shamanic aspects of the movie and of the character, and in particular, the ancestor plane?
This is Michael Grable. I did see it, and I loved the movie. I have to say, I was very excited to see... Well, let me first say, I knew about Black Panther before, but I never really got a chance to read the comics. I wasn't big on collecting comics until I got older. But, you know, I did not know about where his powers came from, where, you know, the identity of the Black Panther came from. And then seeing the movie and seeing that this wonderful fictional country of Wakanda was basically a pagan, well, what we call pagan culture, and they worshipped the goddess Bath. I was so thrilled about that. And, you know, one of the things after seeing it, I was like, I wonder if there's been any sort of, you know, controversy about the fact that they're showing a pagan ceremony, that they're showing people who worship a pagan deity on the big screen. And nothing had come across my feed, but after talking to a couple of friends who don't identify as pagan, yes, there was like Christian groups that were very upset the fact that they were showing a pagan rituals and whatnot. But that's the end of my spiel.
Yeah, so this is Donald talking. I think, you know, I just really loved Black Panther, and really infusing like issues of the African identity and the African American identity. And I think as far as the pagan aspects, I think it's like, it's, I don't know, it's something hard to wrap around, because it's like, it's so different from like Euro and American paganism. And it's like, I think it's like, it's so, at the same time, it's so powerful and it's so infused with spirit, and yeah, so thing on it.
Did you have any thoughts, Cameron?
I actually have not yet seen it, so I will hold my tongue until I am able to provide better thoughts.
Sorry, I hope I didn't ruin anything for you.
Yeah, this is Matthew. I'm going to try really hard not to do any, not to give away any spoilers. Kai, when you see it, just have your own experience. I loved it. I saw it twice. I wept both times. Your experience may be different. We're going to try really hard not to give anything away.
This is Michael Gray. I was going to say, you know, when they did the ancestor plane that Matthew talked about, it made me also think about another film that came out recently. Well, it's not necessarily pagan-esque. Well, not that Black Panther was supposed to be pagan-esque, but the movie Coco that came out, if hopefully y'all have seen it, but there's the scene where, Miguel is going to the land of the dead and he's crossing the Marigold Bridge. And you see the bridge ends at an Aztec temple. And I thought that was amazing. And then getting a chance to look at some of the bonus features that were on the DVDs and whatnot, one of the things when they were deciding on how to construct their version of the Land of the Dead for the film, they were basically wanting each layer of this land to be the layers of history. So at the very base was like the Aztec temple, the Aztec religions and tradition, and then up as throughout time. And I thought that was very cool.
This is Matthew. I have not seen Coco yet, but I heard that it is amazing. So it is on my list. One thing that I guess, though, that is coming through in this conversation, it seems like some of the basic ideas of shamanic ways of seeing the world and the sense of the very existence of ancestral spirits as being a part of our lives seems to be making its way into our mainstream culture. And hopefully this is a very good thing. And then something I'm curious about from you guys, as shamanic practitioners, what perspectives have you learned from your own ancestral spirits and your own helping spirits as it pertains to racial issues and ethnicity in the world today?
Hmm.
I would say that there's probably, this is Kyra, by the way, I would say that my experiences have been benefits that I would attribute to both subtle benefits and conscious benefits. I think that there have been subtle benefits of simply having that backing, moving through the world, the backing of my ancestral helping spirits in general, but also the backing of ancestral helping spirits who reflect my ancestral past, which is varied. People who are connected to me, and so much of our American culture, I think we're seeing a lot of isolation. I think we're seeing a lot less community and a lot less interdependency between persons. So I think the more connection that we can cultivate, even with / especially with the unseen world, the better. I would say that when it comes to race and ethnicity, I had a very interesting experience many years ago where my ability to hear my ancestral helping spirits at the time wasn't the best. So when the message came through, it felt really like, oh, wow, this is something big. They really want me to do this. And the message that came through was, I needed to write 5 poems as an offering specifically for my African ancestors. They were putting it off for about a year, you know, just in the busyness of life, and just every once in a while, you know, cross my mind and do something that I need to do. And I forget what the inciting incident was that sort of made me go, oh, shit, I really have to get this done and do this now. But I remember afterwards, in the months afterwards, looking back on those five poems and seeing how that did something in my Western colonized mind, in my, you know, spiritual, something happened from my doing that, and something clicked into place far more fully with my connection to my ancestral life after having written those poems and read them aloud at that altar. So yeah, there was a piece of me that felt more settled as well. And I look back at them and they're like really beautiful poems. And I'm really grateful that that was the task I was given. So yeah, all of these layers of connection to them, connection to my own self, were achieved in that, in taking up that task.
Wow, that's like really powerful, I think. I'm thinking about my own experiences. Oh, this is Donald. But I'm just like now exploring my own, my Vietnamese roots and my Vietnamese ancestors. I think I've put off for so long. It's like I don't even know where to start and feel like that connection is so weak for me. I think, again, harkening to my own experiences as a Vietnamese man, I wasn't, growing up, I don't think I was really encouraged to learn about my Vietnamese heritage. So, and like, I never really learned Vietnamese and wasn't really enmeshed in that culture. So now, I'm in my 30s and I'm finding myself really craving that connection and with that, my ancestors. And I've started to set up an ancestor altar, and I've been like lighting incense and candles, but I still haven't had that deep connection. And I also wanted to do something for the Vietnamese New Year, but I ended up getting sick. So, but yeah, I think I just find it so powerful that you're making that Kai diet. Been called to make those poems during an offering. I think that's a really powerful way to really bring, to connect with your ancestors. So, yeah, how about you, Michael?
Well, I would say I kind of in the same boat as you, Donald. Growing up, it wasn't, what's the word that I'm looking for? Not necessarily, it wasn't something that we were forced to do, but growing up, my family never really, sounds weird saying this, but my family never really embraced our culture as Mexican. We were Mexican, and that was it. But you know, we never celebrated any holidays. My family never, as far as I can think back, my family never celebrated Dia de los Muertos. And I grew up not speaking Spanish. All of my siblings do not speak Spanish. I mean, they've learned since, and they can have some, most of them have learned since and can have some kind of conversations in Spanish. And I don't think it was a conscious thing that my parents, you know, had assimilated so much into the American culture. But it has been something in me in the last, you know, when I was in college, to try to start reconnecting with my roots. And even to this day, I'm still doing it, but it's just coming through in pieces. And I get from the ancestor spirits that I work with, from the with the Unnamed Path, there is definitely the pushing to dig more into the ancestry of my bloodline to see what I have there. And I am unfortunately doing it slowly. And it because it's also forcing members of my family to talk about stuff that they're not used to talking about, to open up communication between generations. And you know, like last night I had a conversation with my mother, it just popped up about talking about where my grandparents are from, you know, what was it like when they got together, and you know, talking a little bit about my dad's family, because my dad's family is very like they don't talk to each other, so getting information out of them is really hard. So I would say, going back to what Matthew had asked, was, you know, working with my ancestors, it's forcing conversations within my own personal life that I'm not used to having, and just trying my best to rebuild something that we lost. That's me.
Thank you.
This is Chiron. I can totally, that's beautiful. And I totally relate. Not to take up too much, you know, time on this, myself on the subject, but coming from, you know, the other angle for me, and more acutely, actually, has been this nagging thought I've always had in the back of my mind regarding my grandmother's maiden name, which is an Irish name, and always the thought in my mind was, is this a name that was simply taken on, or are we also of Irish heritage? And the experience I've had, especially over the past few years, with deities from the Celtic Isles, energies from the Celtic Isles, having very significant experiences, meeting a lot of new people of Irish heritage, and profoundly so, has sort of, you know, sort of been bringing this up again, sort of like, okay, I began to see, like, all right, I'm beginning to see that there are some Celtic energies in my life, just from a shamanic perspective, but as I continue to peel back the layers of my own personal healing process and where that intersects with my family, and specifically where that intersects with the house I was raised in New York, I actually had this really profound experience where I sort of peeled back that, you know, I opened that last door and all of these Celtic energies that were sort of around the home that had sort of come with my family, my, you know, immediate family, just sort of like really made themselves known. This, you know, black, you know, quote unquote black American family living in the suburbs, who, because the spirit world really does not see things the way we see them. And I just think, especially, it should be cause for great alarm that the spirit world is like, yeah, so you have a leprechaun helping spirit and your, you know, middle-class home in Long Island that's, you know, five black people is, like, filled with Celtic energies, duh, lineage. And, you know, where would we ever see that? Who would fathom that? I think that's so much about shamanism, which, again, to me, is not about identity. It's about efficacy. It's about getting shit done. I think that shamanism is so much about gaps and ramifications. And the gap in the worldview. And here I have this worldview in which I am this. And what's my culture? My culture is, well, we got over slavery and the civil rights happened and then hip-hop. And the spirit world is saying, you Celtic as fuck. You guys Celtic as, you know what I'm saying? And if I do not do what I need to do to traverse that gap, to decolonize my mind and and get closer to that worldview, then I'm missing a lot more than I realize in terms of my sense of who I am.
This is Matthew, and Kai, your comments touch on elements of my experience. And in a nutshell, I've had conversations with some other workers, and we've come to the conclusion that the spirits don't see the divisions that we do, the ethnic divisions, the racial divisions that we spend so much time investing energy in. None of that really means anything to the spirits, because they see things from what's beneath the skin. And in my experience, and it's something I very rarely discuss, my spiritual court is not necessarily European in origin, and nor are, necessarily most of the spirits I work with or who choose to work with me and guide me. One of the very first spirit contact circles I attended, the medium said, "Oh, there's this black woman with you. And she's, you need to listen to her because she's been talking to you your whole life." And I'm like, "Well, why? You know, obviously it's not my great-great-grandmother or anything like that." And the medium said something very peculiar. She said, "Oh, she's always been with you. As a matter of fact, she's been with you for 70 years. And I'm like, "How could she be with me for 70 years? I'm only 30-something years old." But I just had to learn to trust that message from spirit and be willing to deepen that relationship with that spirit guide and pass through my own biases and, get past my own ideas of what's logical and of what's appropriate, and just kind of trust the guidance that we receive from these other dimensions. And for me, so much of my spiritual life has not been through what I call mainstream paganism. I spent years studying with a Lakota Sioux holy man. And after that, most of my spiritual studies were with the people who are practitioners of Afro-Caribbean traditions. And then when I started stepping into mainstream paganism, a lot of it just didn't resonate with me, whether it be Druidism or Wicca and some of the symbolism and themes, like, just really didn't gel with me anymore, even though it's supposed to. It's, you're British. This should sing to your blood, or, you're part Scandinavian. This should really resonate with you. And my experience was always like, not really. And can't we have more? I'd like to see more people of color in these spaces. I mean, I grew up in a very diverse community. I went to very diverse schools. I'm used to being surrounded by people of different backgrounds. And to me, I take notice when I see a space that's predominantly white, because that is not reflective of my perspective and the way I see the world. So it kind of stands out, and I have this reaction like, "Oh, this is kind of weird."
Yeah, this is Kara. I was to echo that. Your worldview is such that you notice something that almost is. And that's also, that goes back also to, your political skills are totally connected to, they're not exactly the same, but they're very much like psychic skills, seeing the things that other people aren't seeing and being able to make the difference because of that. I'd also say that I know that In my own practice and process, past life energies do show up a great deal in my work, and I have been in awe of the level of depth and engagement and viscerality there. I think that oftentimes we are led to, you know, where it intersects with the New Age and pagan thought is sort of a general idea of it. We don't think, I have this skill because I cultivated it in Ireland in 1640. But that's really kind of how it is, you know, in my experience of much of our past life experience is that, you know, like, yeah, you've got this, you know, it's a, like, yes, Caribbean dude, last lifetime you were in Ireland and this bog witch woman is still waiting and she's still chilling with you and, you know, wondering, you know, you're sort of looking at this, why do I keep being led to this spirit? Because she's like, hey, we had a great time last time. You look a little different this time. Let's keep the party going. actually, one thing that I've actually, one thing I often suggest to people who might be at certain parts of their process is that they actually tell the spirit world verbally aloud that they sort of gather their helping spirits. And this actually is also really helpful when there's sometimes a spirit debt issue, like a spirit sort of saying, you know, this better have my money. And you're like, what are you talking about, Venus, Athena? One of the first things I always suggest is that you tell the spirit world or the spirit specifically, hey, by the way, I'm an individual human being born on this date by this name. You'd be surprised how often the spirits might go, oh, my God, sorry. Their perspective is just so completely different than ours that they might literally forget that you're not that bitch who stole their money back in 800 BC or made that promise that you didn't come through. Or they, you know, they might look at you and say, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, you don't look like we're going to be able to work together too well in this lifetime based on your context. Or they might say, you know, I think you can do it. I think, you know, I will help lead you to these extremely ancient texts and with a bit of self-sense knowledge and some past life know-how with me, we'll figure this out again because it really does serve you to work with me again in this lifetime. We really are so interconnected and, I just love the experience that you shared with us, Matthew, because it's an experience that so many Americans of different ethnicities have, and I know that it's sad that for so many people it's jarring because it's visceral and valuable connectedness should not be jarring. You know, it should simply be welcome and celebrated by everyone, you know. But we don't, you know, live in that culture yet.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think this is Matthew again. I think we are little by little making good strides. Now, unfortunately, I have a hard stop, and I'm going to have to sign off. But please, guys, keep going. I think this is an important conversation, and I'm going to leave you with another question, and that is, what are some strategies for building better bridges and building stronger alliances between different practitioners and people from different backgrounds?
Okay. Thank you, Matthew. Yeah. I think, Donald, I think for that question, I think I was thinking how the biggest thing I do for myself is like really owning my own shit and like really working on my shadow. I think, especially going through the program I'm going through now, it's like, I'm really looking at myself, like what are some internalized racism or homophobia that I unconsciously like hold on to and like really working on that. I think, because I think for the longest time, I think I've really internalized, like, shame around my Vietnamese heritage and realizing, seeing how that kind of shows up in how I interact with folks. And I think for the longest time, it kept me from connecting with other folks because of that soul wound, that shadow issue. And I think that's just, like, really learning to heal that shadow wound was allowing me to really own my own power and really able to kind of, I guess, I don't know, that ego defense that keeps me from like connecting with others. So yeah, I think just like really noticing what issues are coming up for me when I interact with other folks, like especially with Euro descended folks or white folks, and like owning what, and also other people of other different cultures, and noticing what comes up for me when I do interact with other cultures, and really, especially, yeah, like just owning that and really healing that, and really, it's oppressive. It might be an oppressor, because I think, especially as a therapist in training, I do bring my biases in the table, and this will help my clients to not acknowledge that there might be a racial or sexist or whatever thing going on. So, yeah.
Do you have any thoughts, Kai?
I would say that I'm really glad that you know, mentioned shadow work, because I was talking to someone recently who is not American, and they were commenting on recent political stuff, and they were sort of saying, like, I can't believe this is happening right now, like, after all these years, and I was trying to explain to them, you know, America's never dealt with its shit. America has very, very eagerly run away from its shit for hundreds of years. We have, whether we're talking about, you know, Japanese internment camps, whether we're talking about American enslavement, whether we're talking about, you know, prohibition, America has never come to grips with its shit. And if you don't actually heal something or resolve it at the root, then and you sort of just try to cover up niceties or boring, you know, apologies and don't actually seek to resolve it, then they will show up again and again and again. And so much of, I think, what we're experiencing in terms of race and ethnicity on a personal level is really just about power. It's just about power and stories about it. And there are, sure, we are powerful. We're all, you know, mystical witches and pagans, and we're learning that we've got this cool power and this cool magical power. And what's also really powerful is our unconscious, our shadow, the things that we have buried and that we cut ourselves off from because they were too painful and scary for us to look at. And that is where there's a storehouse of power, and a storehouse of judgment that is so linked to the American tragedy around these stories about race and ethnicity. So I think it's the first time anyone mentioned or show shadow work, but I would totally agree with Donald that if you want to be a part of the solution in terms of racial and ethnic harmony in America, literally do your shadow work.
Yes, agree to all of that. Being very aware of our own stuff is so very much important. But I also think it's very important to, what's the word, to be able to just sometimes just when working with other people to just listen to what they have to say. To I feel like that, you know, a lot of times when someone from any type of marginalized group has something to say, they often get run over by other people trying to talk over them. And I think it's very important that, you know, we make an effort to listen to these marginalized groups to hear what they have to say. And even for, you know, us as people of color, you know, there are marginalized groups that, you know, don't get heard as often as us. Like, I wish Ken was around, but, you know, I think Indigenous Americans often get run over by especially like the mainstream pagan movement, or even our transgender brothers and sisters get run over by the overarching queer movement quite a bit, or not gender nonconforming siblings get run over quite a bit. So I think it's definitely something that we need to be aware of our own stuff, and also be aware of how we can help those that, if they are wanting our help, to make their voices heard.
This is Karen, and I totally agree.
And who? Someone about to say something?
Yeah, no. What?
Okay. And we did have a question that kind of tied into that. Let's see if I can find it real quick. as people of color, do we think that there needs to be, you know, a bigger push for more, for more inclusive spaces, you know, more spaces where I think I'm losing my train of thought. I'm trying to put a couple of questions together, and it's not working all that well for me. But just in general, do we feel like the modern pagan movement could do with more inclusive space?
This is Chiron, and I would say though there was a time where I longed for that and felt that I really needed that, I would say that I couldn't care less, personally. I think that it's beautiful and wonderful for people to come together, to share ideas, and because they feel a general affinity with nature and animist ideas. And I think that there's so many different kinds of, I think that American paganism falls under the larger umbrella of animism. Take that larger umbrella that we're really expanding the level of events that happen. We're talking about everything from Pantheacon that happens in San Jose, California, to the annual fete for Grand Bois that happens in the Vodou fete that happens in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. Animism and animistic events are everywhere for people to find something that will lead them somewhere. I would say that, to me, if there's anything that would really serve us to have, especially in the pagan world, it would be emphasis on actually building skills. Not just magical skills for manifesting our will and desires, but actually building the skills that we need to clear and resolve energies at their root. People use the word shadow a lot to think that they are healing their shadow simply by wearing a very pretty black blouse. And it needs to stop because we're not getting anything done. We have a lot of good intention, but getting mired in our identity issues and pain. And just like, the work that Donald is saying that he's accomplishing in his worldview because he has actual skills to do the shadow work. These need to be spread. We really care about the pagan community. We need to be equipping people with actual skills to do the work they need to do so that we can become the people that just create. We don't have to use the word inclusive anymore because that's just what we do. That's just who we are,
Definitely. This is Donald here. I think my perspective is like inclusion as far as I think really do you need to have conversations about race and power and in pagan spaces, not necessarily, you know, I think it's like for the longest time, I've just, the only time I hear about those things is in like the Pagans of Color Caucus or other places. And I think that does a disservice for us because it's really ignoring, again, that shadow self where it's easy to just sit in that safe circle and not really think about like the how other folks experience power, and unless it's like really directly affecting them. But I think it's especially with 45 in the White House, I think it's like, and then just this I don't want to say renaissance of queer people of color representation in media, but it's just like it's becoming more and more present. It's like we can't just ignore. And then also the Me Too campaign and whatnot. It's like I think what worries me and sometimes what's turned me off from mainstream paganism is that we don't talk about those things. And then we see that happening in covens where like there is abuse going on, there is racist incidences, and it's like it's just like disheartening. It should be like being pagan is like a minority belief in itself, and we should know what it's like to be a minority. But instead, we're just kind of have this myopic view of like how we want to show up for people. And I think there was something else I wanted to touch on, but I think inclusion as far as like having those talks and really acknowledging those dynamics that play out like in pagan spaces. So.
And unfortunately, I think we should definitely wrap up because I do have something I have to do at 4. But do either of you have any like closing thoughts or anything you just want to throw out there?
I don't know. I think it's such a heavy topic and does like push buttons for me. But I'm so glad we're having this talk. They're thankful for you, Michael and Matthew, for holding the space for this conversation, which I feel like is still sorely needed.
Hi, here, Donald. This is Chiron. I'm really grateful to you, and Matthew, and for all the work that you have been podcasting here.
Thank you both so much for being on the show. And, you know, Ken, when you hear this later, thank you again for also being on the show. And thank you, Matthew, for also helping, you know, put the show together. But, yes, I think let's go ahead and wrap up the show. Let's see, is there anything I need to say? Are either of you going to be doing any sort of any events coming up? Or are either of you going to Stern's thing?
Yeah, I'm planning on going to Stern's thing, and I kind of want to do a workshop on group shadow work or collective shadow work, but I'm still kind of doing research on that and seeing how that actually looks like. So, yeah.
Ooh. That sounds fun.
I also hope to be at Stone's thing. They help me present. I'm just not sure on what yet, but I will definitely guess I've been.
Awesome. I definitely want to hear about it. I unfortunately will not be able to attend Stone's Day, but I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's stories about it. And listeners, if you are interested in Stone's Day, you can find out more information at, I believe the website is stoneandstang.com. It should direct you to the main website for it. And I believe, yeah, the early registration is still going on. It's going on until the early summer. And after that, I think registration increases a little bit. But, yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and play us out with a song from S.J. Tucker, Mirror Self, from the Strollers mix. And then I'll come back and give our last goodbye. So, yes.
Mirror Self, reflect my face. Hear my words, take my place. Breath and Lord will make you whole. You have my heart, and I my soul. Mirror self, reflect my face. Hear my words, take my place. Breath and Lord will make you whole. Take my heart and leave my soul. Oh, show their work, so be ready to run and hide. Is this the magic mirror? Between the worlds, to and fro, hand in hand, it's time to go. Never fear, my miracle. Step by step, between the worlds.
Again, that was S.J. Tucker, Mirror Self, from the Strollers mix. I want to thank, again, everyone who was on the show today. Sorry, the show went a little long, but, you know, this is a big topic. And if you have any comments, questions about today's show, please feel free to email us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. We would love to hear from you. And if we get enough questions, maybe if we get enough comments, maybe, well, hopefully we can get another episode around this topic going, because we still had, you know, quite a few questions that we wanted to touch on but you know, time just ran out. And I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you got something out of it. And we will talk to you again soon. Have a blessed weekend, everyone.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.